Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm here with my mum in Clapham.
Hi, darling.
Hi, mum. I saw you about 12 hours ago.
Yeah.
We had an event.
The mood wasn't as good as it is today.
Okay. Because you were backseat driving.
Darling, I needed to be.
No.
Because Chelsea were playing at home. We got stuck in the worst traffic, going to probably a place that we might never go to again.
Yeah. The most horrendous soft play I've ever been to in my life. I mean, the kids had a great time.
Yeah, they did.
But
There were hundreds of people there.
It was a lot.
There were four birthday parties going on with at least 20 children in each booth. They had them in booths like this, and it was run by teenagers.
So today...
Very excited.
We've got a duo.
Yeah.
A family duo.
Yeah, like us.
Yeah, who work together.
Yeah.
Who
Let's talk
are
about
stars
that
within their own right, just like us, Mum.
Yes, darling.
We've got George and Larry Lamb coming on.
Very excited.
George Lamb, you remember him from Big Brother, being kind of a bit loud-mouthed and gorgeous, with salt and pepper hair. Very handsome.
Yeah.
Six Music, music, kind of, he was pop culture. It was, and now he's gone into farming and education. And then his dad, Larry Silver Fox.
Gavin and Stacey.
Actor, that's been on Broadway, the West End.
And he was
End.
On Strictly.
When?
Christmas special.
Oh, was he? I didn't watch it. So, yeah, we've got Larry and George coming on. They have a company, an initiative together called Wild Farmed, which I'll let them explain better. But it's a regenerative farming business. So, yeah, they are very, very busy. And apparently they're going to bring some bread today.
Oh, wow. I'll get the butter out.
What are you cooking today, Mum?
Oh, it's tricky, isn't it? Lunchtime. So I've done...
And it's cold.
She says it's not cold.
No, but it's cold
I've
out.
I've done harissa lamb meatballs.
Lovely.
Sweet potato mash.
Nice.
I've done my chicory and onion salad, and you've done a green herb salad.
Yeah.
And I have the old panettone left over, which I've not
like
eaten.
That like a hole in the head.
All right, don't eat it.
Oh, I can't not.
So it's panettone bread and butter pudding, which I think everyone loves with a drop of cream.
Gorgeous. Can't wait. George and Larry Lamb coming up on Table Manners. George and Larry Lamb are in our kitchen. George has just come in with so much bread.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it.
We're eating focaccia. Would you like a bit of focaccia, Larry?
I like, yes. Very
your
nice.
Son, well, it's yours. It's your focaccia.
But the focaccia.
Well, your flour.
Focaccia.
Can I just say something? These are two of the best looking men we've ever had in my kitchen.
There you go.
And I just thought I'd put it out there.
Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Having us.
Thank you for having us.
We were just asking whether you two fight, because we fight quite a lot.
A lot. But women do fight a lot.
Really?
Oh. Great opening
Larry,
statement, yeah. Dad. Let's
Carry
go.
On, let's go.
Look.
Wow. No, it's quite interesting, the reason he's saying
get
this.
Get over it.
No, I think that's what men do. No, they get over it and we fester.
Yeah, but in the end you get over it.
So
anyway, give some context for why there's a...
I need to know why you don't fight now.
No, no, but I think it's even better. I want to give you the context of why. So Dad has lived a very unconventional life. He's currently living with his ex-partner and her sister... And my youngest sister.
Jesus.
And so he's basically in a place where there's loads of women.
But not your... mother,
not my mum.
Okay,
and they're all
he's shaking
and
his head,
and they're all having a, there's a, like a bit of a war going on at the moment in the house, basically, which is why he's like which is why he's Larry, like women.
Larry, how many have
women
you had
partners?
Got it.
Partners?
A lot.
Mum, are we
that's not a question.
I'm trying to work out where everyone fits in.
How many life partners have you had?
Yeah, life partners, 7.
Wow, honestly. Mm. Like a cat. You just need 2 more.
No, 7. I don't need 2 more. No,
9 knives.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on.
No, I
seven,
don't.
7 knives.
7
partners.
Is enough. And actually,
but
too
you've
many.
Gone backwards now with ones you've been out with before.
No, friendship. But the thing is, fortunately, you know, there's 2 of them, 3 of them I've retained a really nice relationship with. It's best if you do, because the problem is, whether you like it or not, once you have children with somebody else, you're connected for life.
I say
until
that.
The moment you die, you are connected. So the best thing to do is get yourself a great big white flag, put it up, and live in a state of truce. Because otherwise, you drag your kids into war for the rest of their life.
So
and
you're
it's not
so
fair.
Different from your persona
it's
on
not
Gavin and
fair.
Stacey.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
He's pretty mild.
He's mild.
Yeah,
him,
but
Mick.
He's mild. But you wouldn't imagine on Gavin's that he'd have lots of different partners. He's
not him,
absolutely
dear.
Not
him. No, he's standard Marks and Spencer's man. You know what I mean?
Marks and Spencer's is great, by the way.
Yeah. No, but I mean, in terms of his, it's great.
So
wrote me a load of new stories.
Yeah, you know that.
Yeah,
is your flower and Marks and Spencer's? Yeah. We love
they're
it.
They're our main partner.
No, I understand what you're saying. Is Mick your character? Was he called Mick?
That's him.
He would have worn a nice cashmere jumper from M&S.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he'd have got into cashmere
yet.
Cashmere,
for Christmas,
nice merino
maybe.
Wool.
A little
merino wool.
So you're here.
Mm. This is what we find.
And obviously we know of you both from different worlds of entertainment. But now you're in farming and you're working together. And I think you're going to explain it better than I did on the intro. So please, can you tell us about Wild Farmed?
Yeah. For context, I used to be a game show host and I'd fallen into television.
How? Well, how did you start?
I was managing bands, actually. I was managing DJs, and did that. And that was really good fun.
Who
and
were
it was
you managing?
I managed these guys called the Audio Bullies.
Oh, yeah.
And so we did that for a few years. And then...
Did you manage Lily Allen?
And I managed
for a
Lily
bit.
Allen briefly, just before she was... Right up until she was successful, actually. and then I had a few years... then I was just trying to figure out what I was going to do with myself. And I got a job. I was renting a desk from a mate who had a TV company. And he got the tender to do E4 Music, which is like MTV type stuff. And they needed lots of VJs. And I knew about music. And I always had plenty to say for myself. So they said, do you want to come and give it a whirl? And I tried it and I liked it. And so for a couple of years, I was doing a bit of TV presenting whilst I was figuring out what I was going to do. I knew I didn't want to be a band manager because it's a thankless task.
Actually, people say it's a pleasure managing
I'm sure. I did that for a bit and then I got a bit of a break. I kind of followed in the vacuum of Russell Brand and I ended up getting a really good manager who was the main guy at that moment in Britain. And within kind of 2 years, I'd gone from doing nothing to basically being quite successful.
Did you enjoy it?
And I enjoyed the kind of fame and the bright lights and all the money and all the rest of it. But it definitely wasn't making my heart sing. I'd set this kind of phantom goal as primetime television. And when I get to it, I'll be happy. Finally got onto primetime. Turns out it's no different. You earn a bit more money. You work at a different time of day. Rang Dad, was lying in bed one morning, sitting in my nice house with my nice car, with all my nice stuff. Rang Dad, said, Dad, I know this sounds really bad, but like I feel totally empty and I've got everything and everybody's telling me how much I'm smashing it. And like, it's not making my heart sing. And he said, well, you know, game show host, not a very serious guy in the big scheme of things, is he? And so I was like, wicked, you could have told me that, you know, 5 years ago. But anyway.
And where were you at in your career at this point? You were just like, you were always working, you were doing...
Yeah, I was just very lucky and just basically worked.
You did, you know? Yeah, but you worked all through the 80s. And then in the mid-90s, when he hit 50, like naturally when you hit 50, you have to take a step down the ladder, basically, anyway.
Especially if you're not that far up the ladder in the first place.
No, but it's like, no, but that, like, that's how it works. And then, and at the same time, reality TV came in.
Yeah. And a lot of actors had a big problem when reality television started coming in, because it was much cheaper to produce reality television.
It saturated the market with reality TV. Yeah, it did.
And so lots of stuff that would have been drama wasn't drama in the end. So I, like a lot of actors of my age, felt it was like it was getting a bit tough. So that was the first time I ever really had any kind of slowdown. And then it all just picked up again and it all just rolled on. That was it. So
after about 8 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right, no, but it's not like all, you know, just smooth, because it's interesting. You've had two kind of acts in your your life, and but he was definitely like, it was rolling again by the time he was giving me the you're not a very serious guy in the big scheme of things chat. Anyway, I'm glad he did it, and I'm glad he gave me that, because I knew anyway. You know everything, basically. You know all the answers, you know, but it's just whether or not you want to listen to them and accept them and face up to them. And so I knew I had to make a change, kind of decided to do it quite dramatically and renounce all worldly goods and get rid of my house and tell my agent I'm not coming back to do the next series, and off I went.
And just like...
Did you eat, pray, love?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you?
Yeah.
What's that? Yeah.
Well, he went and found himself.
Yeah, so I went off, had a whole kind of man search
went
for
off
meaning.
Twitter
for,
and everything.
Went off Twitter. I was barely on Twitter. Twitter was just coming out, actually. And at this moment, this is like 2011, 2012. Yeah. First big thing was going on with the London riots were happening at that point. And I was just like, this isn't okay. There's two worlds going on and most people have got nothing. And I've managed to wangle my bit into the small set of people who've got everything. And basically what became apparent is if I went into a room full of wealthy people, no one had ever seen me before because they don't watch television. And if I went into a room full of poor people, everybody knew everything about me. How you doing, Georgie? How's the old man? How's it going? He's on EastEnders, he's in Gavin and Stacey. I'm on Big Brother's Little Brother every day. Like, everybody knows us. And you start to realise that actually game shows is distraction for poor people. And I don't want to be complicit in that, you know? So off I go, start trying to figure out who I'm going to be, what I'm going to do, Om Shanti Om, you know, off in the jungle, drinking the medicine, doing whatever it is. Wasn't really finding what I was looking for, didn't find my guru, thought, fuck it, I'll go to Ibiza. So I went to Ibiza, walked into a nightclub, met this great big guy who's 6'10", who was one half of Groove Armada, and I asked him what he was up to, and he said he just sold his publishing rights and he bought a 100-hectare farm down in Gascony and he's trying to figure out how you do wheat production properly. And so began this kind of 10-year spiral into what is now a regenerative food business, and we're in about 300 stores around the country. We just partnered up with M&S. We're trialing with Nando's at the moment. We've got about 60 farmers up and down the UK who farm with us now. And we're probably the biggest collective of regenerative farmers in the country,
amazing.
Europe. Yeah,
Farmer George.
Yeah.
And does your heart sing a bit more?
Definitely. I'm slightly more involved in the day-to-day business than I'd like to be.
Is that because it's still...
He wants to be a farmer.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah,
but he's got to be a business executive.
Why do you live in bloody Dalston then?
Yeah. I'm on my way.
Where
to
are you
going to
choose to go?
I don't know.
Don't tell Jessie, because she'll be saying, oh, can we move there, Mum?
Yeah, I've seen
that. Gloucestershire, that looks gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. No,
too far.
So do you get your wellies on and you go to the farms?
Yeah, I love it. I did about 2 or 3 years of doing kind of busman's holidays. Every holiday I'd get, I'd be off to Andy's farm. His first farm, he's back farming in the UK now, but his first farm was in France. So I just go down to Gascony and spend the time. You do the kind of like the easy job. So I do all the electric fences and moving the cattle around. But there's just something what I've realised actually, I hope I'm not that complicated. Like, I need to see the horizon, like not just metaphorically. Like, I really need to, I need to see it literally. And it just changes my whole state if I can see it.
So you don't miss telly?
Not at all.
At all?
I miss doing radio.
You were on Six Music. I think I came in as a backing singer for Jack Pignatte when you were doing your Six Music show.
So I used to do it with my best mate, and he's the funniest bloke I know. So we just sit.
Who was your best mate?
He's called Mark Hughes, a little fella. And we just sit and do the same shtick we've been doing for the previous 20 years on there, you know. And it was really good and people liked it. But again, same thing. I hadn't really, at that point, I was kind of busy orbiting my own ego most of the time. So
how did your dad get involved?
Yeah. Just by being his son.
Yeah.
Or no, by being his dad. I get that muddled all the time.
Yeah.
Just like being a supportive dad. And, you know, I'm basically a displaced country boy.
Really?
You know, yeah.
I don't sound like it. No, I know.
That's the secret. But no, like given my choice.
Where were you born now? Where were you born?
In North London, Edmonton. But, you know, where I revert to country boy in the sticks. You know, I have an old place in Normandy, and as soon as I've got any time free, I'm gone. That's it. I'm gone.
So let's talk about growing up together. Were lots of holidays in Normandy? Did you go there? Did you have the place? All the fucking holidays in Normandy.
No other holidays.
Why did it drive you potty?
It was a house we were all sort of spending time in because it had become this target to do up this property, which was a bit of a wreck. In fact, it was a wreck, but a resurrectable wreck in a lovely place. And so that became my passion. That became the thing I was set on doing. And, you know, I wasn't always an actor. I had a big old life. Before I was an actor, I worked in the oil business and I was working in America and Canada out doing work on pipelines and oil lines out in the middle of nowhere. So I kind of became a country boy out in America. And then when I came back here, found this old place in Normandy, and that was it. I saw the potential for having like a camp in the country, you know, that would be, you know, that gradually, you know, that would become my place. And that's what it did. It just over the course of the first 20 years or so became my spiritual home and still is now, 35 years down the line.
What is a childhood memory, a food memory from those trips to Normandy for you, George?
We were allowed to go down into the creperie, basically. Yeah. It's a one-horse town where Dad was. It's like a famous old
half-horse town.
It's a famous old cheese town. And we used to go down, we used to walk down and go to this creperie and just eat, you know, like cheese and ham.
It's what him and his mates could do. So when I took, you know, I'd go over there with like half a dozen really rowdy teenagers and, you know, and spend my time just like cooking, fixing, carrying, doing everything for them. And the one thing they could do was walk down into the village and go to the creperie down there, and that was their
kind of one thing.
Yeah,
there were no discotheques.
It wasn't anything else.
It was a bit. By the time I was discotheking, I was out of there.
Yeah. So where were you? You were born in London.
Yeah, I was born in Hammersmith, on North End Road when I was a kid.
Great market there.
Still used to be.
Still not bad, you know, fruit and veg.
But not like it was then. No, I mean, I can remember living in a flat above it, and you'd look out, and our place was thronged all week long. You know, you'd like people between the line of stalls and the buildings that I live in. You looked, and you could just see people down there all the time. It's not like that anymore. You know, the supermarkets have bashed them. That's the trouble.
Do you still live around there?
No. No, moved north years ago.
So creperies.
So creperies. What else would we do? I remember loving going to the markets. I remember going, there used to be this big market. Saint-Pierre-sur-Dive every Monday. And they had in this like old style, like proper old kind of, you know, what would that be? Yeah, like a proper market
hall. Big market hall. So, you know, a covered market, but the roof of the market was 40, 50 feet in the air. Yeah. So you were almost outdoors, indoors.
And like with traditional, you know? With all sorts of livestock in there, which is something I certainly didn't see when I was growing up.
It's all stopped now. It was a traditional market, and then the European regulations all changed. They couldn't sell live animals there at all. So that was it. The character of it changed. But that was we would go there on a Monday morning, and as a bit of local life, and you know, thousands of people would be there, and it was a really vibrant thing. And we'd stop. You know, you would always go and get like sausage. They sold sort of sausages, grilled sausages, in baguettes, and
Doing regenerative farming, it's really hard to say.
It is, I know, that's right.
It's a bugger, isn't it?
Yeah. Take off. Just quite as well
just,
as we'd hope.
Just leave that gin alone for half an hour, right? You'll be fine.
Has it made you think about what you're eating? I think you still eat meat.
Yeah, for sure.
But you promised that you did.
100%.
But has it changed the way that you
definitely
eat?
Without question. Because once you've looked behind the curtain, it's very difficult to unsee what you've seen and what you understand. And interestingly, Andy, who's the
Groove Armada,
who's my business partner, and there's three of us who set it up, Wild Farmed, and Andy, who was the kind of lead on it, he was a 20-year vegetarian, And when he started farming, he realised that you can't do this whole notion of doing, you're a dairy farmer, you're a beef farmer, I'm an arable farmer, and separating it all is a nonsense, basically. And so, if animals and plants have developed over millennia in symbiosis, and if you have them together, you've got a whole load of solutions, and if you separate them, you create,
That's exactly
problems,
what Thomasina Meyer says.
There you go, yeah.
She says you can't not have cows because cows do things to the land that you need them to do because that fertilizes and that's how you embellish the land.
So I'm much more careful about where I get my food from, and certainly with meat I would only eat if I'm coming somewhere where I trust them and I know they're going to buy good stuff. It's a madness that we're in a situation where you have to kind of stipulate having like non-chemical laced food, so to even have a standardization or qualification of organic, super peculiar, because everything else is laced with herbicides and fungicides and pesticides and all the rest of it. It's a nonsense.
Can I ask about, we've got the Normandy crêperie, but who was doing the cooking when you were growing up? Living
my
together.
My mum, thankfully.
Were your parents together?
No. Once he was about three, we realised we were going to have to live around the corner to each other and have him back and forth between
us.
And
have you got any brothers or sisters?
I've got two little sisters from a different mum.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'd spend some of your time with your dad and some of the time with your mum.
Yeah. And it was a lot of time, If I was away, sometimes he'd come with me and then, I'd come back and I'd be around maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and he would come and stay with me, and so it was good between his mum and
how was the food?
What's the, when you go unaccompanied minor on
the
plane?
Yeah, you have to wear a lot of that. Neck arms.
He flew right across America when it was 87, so you were 8. So he flew right across America, and he finished up sitting, I think it was in Salt Lake City in the airport for about 6 or 7 hours, waiting for a flight onto Los Angeles. And but he was always very, very independent. I can remember in his early teens, and I was spending a lot of time in and out of Paris, and there were friends of mine there that had boys about the same age, and I fixed it up for them to meet. And I remember saying, look, I'm going to have to take you down. We get on the metro. And he said, Dad, I can do the metro. All right? I can do the metro. I don't need you to take me anywhere. See you later. That was it. So,
where do you think that came from?
I think only children are pretty independent, aren't
they? Going away to school.
And I got sent away to school.
Oh, you went to boarding school?
When I was 6. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm joking. No, when I was 11.
Did you like it?
In the end, yes. it was the best boarding school you can imagine. More hippie.
Which
kind
one?
Of thing. School St. Christopher's, so it's teachers by their first name, no school uniform, vegetarian.
Girls and boys.
Yeah, just like
Where
have a nice time,
it?
Basically. It's in Letchworth, which is just an hour north of London.
Yeah.
And you loved it?
Yeah, the first year you hate it. And I rang home every night and sobbing and all the rest of it, there was a queue. There used to be me. I think I went after Mark every night, and then Rory went after me. And you literally would hand this like wet hand handset, like on the payphone, and you'd be like, oh, and you just bawling. But then basically you hit puberty, and you realise that you're in a holiday camp, and there's girls everywhere, and you've got all your mates around you, and you can, you can get a game. You can just walk into the sitting room. Be like, who wants to play football? And within 5 minutes, there's 25 guys outside playing football. Like, how cool is that? Yeah.
What made you go to boarding school? Why did you decide?
His mum and I were not for the idea at all. But we wanted to get him somewhere where there was a bit of character to it, And the only way you could do that was to get into the private thing. I mean, it wasn't massively expensive. It was expensive enough because I wasn't earning a lot of money at the time. But it was the ethos of this place, which was kind of like outward bound. It was vegetarian, and they all seemed to be a wonderful place for him to be. And we liked the idea of there being girls and boys in the same place as a residential school, and that they kind of had a different sort of life there. And he was a single boy, which is another thing, because back and forth between a mum and a dad, doting mum, doting dad, you become like the prince.
Yes.
That's it. So in the end, he began to get a little bit unbearable, so
still
he had to ship him off.
Did you like the vegetarian food?
No, it was terrible.
Was it?
It was terrible. I used to sell hamburgers, actually, down at the smoker's corner.
I bought him a hibachi, and he had a hamburger stand out the back of the school.
Yeah. That's amazing. Did you get in trouble?
No, I never got caught. Yeah, never got caught. But it was like there was like a tiny little pitch and putt golf course that backed onto the smokers bit, and then my mate's house backed onto that, who was a day pupil. So you could I just run like 100 metres across the corner of, you know, through the woods, and I could go and stash everything in his.
You've always been quite enterprising.
Entrepreneurial. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
So did you go to university?
No.
So you left school, and what did you do as soon as you left school?
So I was at college, and we were just nuts about dance music. And back then, okay. Dance music worked out of it was like a network of record shops up and down the country, and so I was one of the kids.
Are you about the same age?
I'm 43.
I'm born
79.
So you used to just like I was one of the kids who used to hang around the record store basically, and so our one with dad at that point was living out in Southwest, like in near Kingston. So I used to hang out at this place, Slamming Vinyl, and if you stood there long enough, because it was a kind of cottage industry, you could meet everybody. So all the promoters would come in to sell their tickets. They'd give their tickets and pick up their money.
Is that like rough trade?
They'd put in a bit more, even more kind of niche, okay. To be honest with you. And then they'd come in, and other guys would come and drop the flyers. The guys who would drive the vans, they'd bring the vinyls round. So if you knew them, you knew where you could get pressings so you knew how to get access to the pressing plant, so you knew the promoters. The DJs would come in to pick up their records, so you could meet the DJs. You knew the promoters, you could get to the pressing plant, so you could pretty much get a handle on everything that you needed to get a handle on. And one of my mates at school, at college, was like, I'm going to be a DJ. I was like, sweet, I'll be your manager.
And who then was that?
This was his guy, Audio Bullies. And then of course, like, it wasn't.
Did you put on club nights?
And then we put on club nights. We did all of that stuff, and you know, had little studios, and did, you know, and ran around chasing DJs around for 3 or 4 years, begging them to play our music. And it was, you know, it was pretty brutal. You know, all of our, I was at that point, I just worked on them. Then my stepmom, she worked in films, and so I was like a runner basically, you know, and then I realised actually the security guys were earning way more money than I was, and they were doing much less. So I'd just do the, you know, putting the cones out and all the rest of it for the wagons, because I was just like, I had this up my eyes on the prize of becoming this manager. And then gradually all our mates had gone off to uni, they started coming back, and that's when it starts to get a bit, you know, hot under the collar, because everyone's like, is it not happening, boys? You know, and you're like, no, it's coming.
Well, it did happen, and then
I got a job driving. I was in Ibiza. I got a job driving all the DJs for a club in Ibiza, and so I used to put these CDs. I used to make a CD of all the big hits of the day, and then slip our ones in every third or fourth tune, basically. And they'd send, and then so when I was driving along, I'd like turn it up, and then by the end of the summer, a few of the DJs were like, "What's that?" And I'd give them a copy, and one of the tunes blew up, and we came back.
Look at his dad's face, just smiling
so
proudly.
Belling, dear.
Belling.
Of course, it's belling. Yeah.
Yeah.
When's Gavin and Stacey doing another one?
Oh, please.
Have we had enough of it?
Of Gavin and Stacey? Oh, yeah. No. That's a major
just
part
sick of
my
being
life,
asked that question.
I think the chances of that happening again are
James
so...
James is coming back.
Well, yeah, I know, you know, but like that's...
I'm sure they'll make a film of it.
It's too...
That'll be the next thing they do. Yeah, of course they will.
It's like the Downton Abbey kind of thing.
That's the logical thing to do.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, because to put the whole thing together, to get everybody together, to write it. You know, you're talking at least like... To write it, get it approved, get it signed off, to start casting the people, figuring out where you're going to... That's 2 years, right?
So what are you working on now, then?
I'm just working...
I'm just working over...
I wrote a novel during the COVID. And,
wow.
And so... I finally, after a lot of messing around and time, like me wasting time and not getting on with it quickly enough. But anyway, you know, because the next thing you've got to do once you've written a novel is you've got to get somebody who wants to publish it, and then you've got to get it all honed down to where it is a publishable commercial piece. And so I'm now working with an editor on an edit of the book to get it down to the kind of the next level.
What's it about?
It's based on my life. It's about a little film company that go off on a project in the Caribbean, and they just run into a lot of problems. It all goes wrong, but they manage to get themselves out of it.
And is this what happened to you?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, years ago, I went on this job in the Caribbean with a great big international mini-series, as they used to call them. And, you know, we were drifting around the world for 8 months and we finished up in the Caribbean. And indeed, there was a big political hoo-ha going on at the time, and they load us on a plane and get us out of there. But so it's sort of loosely based on that, just the fact that something like that can happen and that it's out of your control.
So is writing quite a new thing for you then?
No, I've always written. I've written lots, you know, written lots of ideas, and I'd never got anything published until in 2010. I wrote an autobiography because George said, you know, everybody knows who you are now from Gavin and Stacey and EastEnders, so you better start churning out some of those old stories you bored me to death with for the last 20 years and turn them into a book. So I did, and the book was a success. So that was the first time I'd written. And then I tried my hand at sort of trying to get a novel written, but I had no idea. So I just spent the next 10 years reading.
George, have you read your dad's first draft?
No.
But you're up for it?
Yeah, I will do, definitely. To be honest with you, it was more distracting. So my mum, when COVID kicked off, my mum was living in the middle of nowhere. And the phone, and you remember at the beginning when everybody thought it was the Black Death and all the rest of it, and it was really heavy. Anyway, I'd been out for a run, and I came back and I had about 5 missed calls, and it was my mum, and she'd had a load of health scares, and I was like, oh fuck, has something gone wrong? So I'm slightly panicked. I ring her, and I'm like, mum, what's going on? And she's just like, oh god, it's so bad. I was like, what's happened? Did you hear from the hospital? No, it's worse than that. I'm like, mum, what's going on? And finally, she's just like, your dad's called me. He's asked if he can come and isolate with me. Now, bearing in mind, these two haven't lived in a house together for 35 years or whatever at this point, basically, right? So I said, what did you say? She's like, well, I've had to say yes, haven't I? Anyway, so dad went down.
How many months or years did you last?
I'd gone to France straight away, and then I thought, hang on a minute, I'm going to be stuck out here with and it was really tight there, the way they were controlled. It was nothing like here. It was all easy peasy here. You know, you had to go out with a piece of paper all signed, dated, timed and everything else. And if they caught you with it, it's €135 fine on the spot, and you better have it with you now. So they took it very seriously, and I thought, I'm going to run back to the UK and go out in the country at Linda's. Right, because they
where
had a
was
big,
it, where was she living then?
In Herefordshire, like rural, middle of nowhere, Black
they
Mountains.
They had a great big old caravan right at the back of the property, and I thought, I'll go and live there. You can't live in the caravan. I can live in the caravan. Anyway, it was all sorted because across the road, a dear neighbour of hers had to go away to look after her dad, and so her house was there, and she needed somebody to look after it. So I went and I
it's
went
amazing
and
the bits of it that you remember that actually is a story. So anyway, I'm ringing. He didn't. He lived in the house with my mum.
Eventually,
he went across the road, right? But she was ringing me every day, and she's just like, I need to get this guy out of here, basically. and he's ringing me going, this is amazing. It's such a good vibe. And I'm thinking, and I could hear in my mum's voice, it was serious, you know? And I was like, what can I do to get him out of the house? I was like, Dad, you know what? I think it'd be an amazing opportunity for you now. This is the time to write your novel. And he was like, yeah, you know what, actually? I think you're right. Anyway, he went in the caravan every day, and he wrote his book, because when he's got incredible discipline, Dad, so he went and just got there, and gradually things got better. But by the time, and then although it was still quite fraught, so I went down there about around the time, you know, when what's his face went up to Durham or whatever.
Cummings.
So you like, he's like, should we travel, not travel? But I was like,
Barnard Castle.
I need to do Dominic. A bit of a UN, you know, NATO kind of vibe, basically. So I went down to make sure everything was all right. I got there. My mum was totally ashen. She looked terrible. And then she was having like problems with her heart. So we ended up getting an ambulance out. And then Dad, who was like, his leg was knackered at the time, he hobbled down from the caravan, and he was like, what's going on? I was like, Mum's had a heart attack and you're leaving. That's what's going on, basically. So then that was the end of that. But by that point,
you heard of people getting married again the second time, we got divorced again the second time.
Does anybody want to eat anything?
Yes, please.
We'd love to eat something.
I've done some lamb meatballs with sweet potato, harissa, and Jessie's done a herb salad.
It's just a green herb salad. And then this is Mum's little one that my sister lives in Los Angeles, and there's an amazing
restaurant called
Middle
Safi.
Eastern restaurant
and
called Safi.
Just roasted onions
with chicory and like a citrus dressing onions. With walnuts.
This is delicious.
Is it?
Thank you so
absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely.
Pleasure.
What a treat.
There's loads more meatballs.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow, stop it.
Do you like pudding? We haven't really talked about food that much, actually. We need to talk about food a little bit. So, starter, Larry, what would be in your dream last supper?
Half a dozen really, really good, really good fresh oysters.
Do you get good ones? Where do you get yours?
No, Normandy's good. There's a big, big...
Are they fat ones? Because I can't deal with the too biggie ones.
It depends. It's the time of the year. That's what it's all about.
Really?
The time. Yeah, well, they're full of eggs. And they're full of sperm. So, like, you know, take your choice. What do you want? But so
really?
It's the time of the year you get, you know, the, and that's why, you know, there's certain times of year you don't eat
them.
It's
that with the bread and butter pudding and it's
that's
all
what
just
I mean.
Feeling
that's
quite...
It. Like, if you want a mouthful of Brill cream... That's go.
Oh, wow, Larry, I love you. You're filthy. Brilliant. Come on.
But anyway, Okay. Yeah, half a dozen really good, really fresh oysters.
And what do you have it? Just lemon
nothing,
or you're going to have...
Nothing.
Oh.
Open them
savage.
Up and just
purist.
Eat them the way the French do. Rip them off the rocks, bust them open and eat them. They don't need anything at all. It's all a lot
I
of bollocks.
I definitely would have some shallots with a little bit
of
vinegar and chili and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I've got
one spoon.
All you're doing is just tasting.
I've never thought about an oyster having sperm in it.
Please,
and
don't.
Now I don't know if I'm going to... Could you think
you'll
you can
never
ask for
not,
the,
you'll
the,
never
the girl ones?
Hear that.
Okay, so... okay, that's your starter. What's your starter, George?
He's much more the foodie, he is.
Are you a foodie?
Yeah.
Because of his mum. His mum's
yeah,
an amazing cook.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the best meal that she used to give you when you were younger, or she does now?
Oh, do you know what, actually? It would be only be... I'm going to go quite old school for my ones, because I think if you were... like if you're having your last meal, you want to think about your life and all the people who've been in it and the...
Granny soup.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. So my granny, no word of a lie, every single day of her life, she had soup, yeah? And the first thing she said when you came in her house, whatever she, you know, obviously maybe not first thing in the morning, but like after midday, would you like a wee bit of soup? A wee bit of soup? Would you like
the
a wee bit
best.
Of soup?
What was this soup?
Oh. Any soup, all soups, but just like that's a
serious mixed vegetable soup that was just
lentil soups, mixed vegetable soups. But it's just more specifically my granny's soup. It doesn't really matter which one it was, the tomato one, the watercress one, whatever.
Yeah.
Just.
I love
one
that.
One of hers.
Yeah, and I would have that as well if I couldn't have the oysters.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is the starter. What is your mum's favourite meal that she cooks for you? Well, she used to, and your ex-wife, you know, what was your favourite meal that she used to cook?
It's the way she does it rather than what she's actually cooking.
Yeah, right.
She's just whatever she makes... It's just got a finesse about it.
Well, how was it in COVID time? Because she obviously was cooking for you,
she's
I guess.
That's basically what
that
was going
that's
on.
That's what sent her
over. Yeah. Well, that was it. Yeah.
I was cooking for her as well. I would say, OK, I'm going to get some beef and cook it on the grill outside. And she would say, all right.
So your mum is just a great cook, but you can't really pinpoint one meal
well,
that she
I mean,
used to
actually,
make.
The first thing I like that she makes is salads.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she'll just make
good
this
dressings.
Salad and it just goes on and on and on. And there'll be like... You know, like everything. She was into like, you know, flaking and shaving and making up like pangrattata and just doing, you know, so there's just all just layers and layers going through this thing that takes hours to make the salad. But it's but then when you look at it, you don't think it's much. But then when you eat it, you're like, oh,
delicious.
Wow. Yeah, and the eggs are just right.
Would you agree with that?
Oh,
Larry?
She's just the most fabulous cook. Fabulous. Fabulous. And all that care that she takes. Mm. I, you know, open the fridge, see what's in there, pull some of it out, chuck it in a bowl and eat it.
He's kind of fuel guy, basically.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm fuel.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best dish you cook if you're doing a dinner party?
Or do you just know where to eat?
No. I love cooking. I like making vongole. Vongole is probably up there in my all-time.
You can make it. I've never tried.
I've never tried because I'm quite intimidated by it.
No, you've got to do it. It's not that complicated.
Really?
I've really mastered pasta in lockdown.
Did you make your own pasta?
No, but that is in just how to get the glisten on the
with the,
you know,
the pasta water,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and also, and it's about the about 20-30 seconds of the bash around at the beginning, so you get a load of the water in there. But then you move the pasta around with it, and it's the, I don't know whether it's the gluten releasing or whatever it is, but that's how you create that kind of, it binds, and it takes the glisten and the sauce onto the pasta rather than it just being around the pasta. Yeah. Anyway, that, or how we got into business with Dave and Jeremy from Jolene.
Jolene's a restaurant that lots of our listeners will know, but it's in Stokey. Would you say it's Stokey?
Stokey.
And it's fabulous.
Yeah,
is it near Anne?
Yeah, and they've got Premier and they've got Western.
Yeah,
Laundry.
So they had this restaurant called Premier, which was really, really cool. And I was going there a lot and sitting at the bar, and the two guys who ran it, one was cooking, one was in the front. And he was telling me, it was the first time I'd come across natural wines, and I was, you know, I was just trying them and all the rest of it. And he was explaining this whole story. And as the story was unfolding, I realised that if you swapped out the word grape for grain, the story he was telling me there about these natural grapes was very, like, pretty much the same story as my mate Andy was doing with this natural grain over in France. And we're chatting, and I was like, wow, you've got to come and meet my mate Andy. Like, you know, it's basically the same thing you guys are doing with natural wine. Anyway, they came over with a kind of loose idea of maybe we'd do a bakery together. And David, who's the chef, went out into one of the silos on the farm and got a load of spelt. And brought the spelt back in, and he made this spelt risotto. It was unbelievable. It was the best spelt. It was the best thing. One of the best things I've ever put in my mouth.
Wow.
We pretty much. Andy reached across the dinner table and was like, "Right, we're in business, boys. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever you want to do, we're doing
but
it."
I reckon you could make any risotto out of any grain.
Yes, you can.
Because Jack Monroe made it out of porridge, didn't she?
Yeah,
that was lovely.
Yeah,
she's something. She isn't
she's
she?
Amazing.
Eh?
It was delicious, and I make that subsequent. So if people come round, I'll make it.
You do a spelt risotto. Yeah. What's your toppings like?
Got loads of. It's got a ridiculous amount of parmesan cheese in it, basically. But
that makes it.
It does make really.
Yeah, to be honest.
Yeah. You can say it's a load of other things.
Do you
there's
put
quite
wine
a bit of wine
in, well,
in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a bit of wine, load of onions.
Can't really go wrong.
And loads of parmesan cheese and loads of butter. And it's weirdly, it's delicious. And we've got this amazing, I've got this really nice vinegar that I put in just to balance it, kind of thing.
Which vinegar?
I'll send you a picture. I can't remember what it's called. It's the secret ingredient for
it's
a mate
not a
wine.
Sherry vinegar.
It kind of.
Because that's when I went to Jolene and I had their salt and vinegar potatoes.
Yes, there you go. It's that.
It's that. Yeah. It's the best. Yeah. It's the ones that I make. Yeah. Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Great.
What's your party dish?
I don't know. Well,
he's got two dishes. Which one do you want?
All right, both.
What's the first one?
What's the first one? What did we eat exclusively for 20 years? 20 years.
Well, my old mate Brizio, we finished a long job together, and he came to England with me because our only means of communication was French. He's from Rome and I'm from London.
And do you speak good French?
Yeah, not bad.
Okay.
Not bad. A lot better now than I did then.
Okay.
And so he taught me how to make about four or five standard sugos, as he calls them, you know, dressings for pasta, because that was always his job.
Mm. Sauce.
Sugo, yeah, the sauce. And so the one that I started to make that the kids all liked and still like now is just a plain tomato sauce. That's it.
Pasta red, it's banging. It's
pasta
quite,
red,
it's,
come on.
It's quite similar to the sauce that was on there.
So give us your recipe. It's got no onions in it. Has it got onions
in it?
Oh, it has.
Yeah.
Okay,
you
come
just,
on.
You take, depending on how much you're going to make, but you take, say, a decent side onion and you cut it down across ways until you've got it as small as you can. Mm. And then you basically, you dissolve that onion in hot olive oil, or mix a bit of lighter oil in with it, and just until it makes a saffrate, is it? Or is that they call it when it's
saffrito?
Saffrito. Yeah. So when it's like when it's all see through and it hasn't at all.
So no celery, no carrot,
nothing.
Just onion.
And then I just put salt and sugar to taste, because if not, it's just tomato. So and you know.
No garlic.
No garlic. No nothing. Salt and sugar.
But a long time. Long time.
Cook it a long time.
Yeah, but it's got onion, remember?
Yeah.
Because that was made without onion, that one.
Really?
It was just garlic, yeah.
It was banging.
It's lovely.
So, and what's your other dish that you made?
Well, I suppose, you know, like cooking on a grill, like a spatchcock chicken or a rib of beef.
Does it?
Do you do a whole rib of beef on the
plate? Yeah, the rib of beef is better. The spatchcock's a bit dry.
Yeah. Well, it depends. I've got people who think it's the best in the world, so please. All right.
Yeah.
But the rib of beef's a hit every time.
Yeah, I know. But I've learned how to do.
Okay.
All right.
Fine.
Jessie will go. Right? It's really lovely, Mum. But
yeah,
there's always. What should I have done today?
Yeah.
I could have had a tiny bit more salt, but it was beautiful.
Eloise and her boyfriend was round. He sat there and ate that chicken, right? And I've got it so I can get the breast all lovely and moist. Ooh, and he said he'd never, ever in his entire life eaten anything like it. There you go.
Is that what he said?
Who's Eloise?
That's what he said. My daughter, my eldest.
And the boyfriend.
He's
trying to impress you, Larry. I'm sorry. I'm sure it is delicious, but he's probably going to ask for her hand in marriage very soon and needs to butter you up, mate. So, mains, your own...
What would I like?
Yeah.
So you're going on a desert island.
Well, it depends what you can get, but you know.
You can get anything you want.
Yeah, anything.
Don't be too literal.
I don't know. I love all sorts of things. I tell you what I did have once, and I used to get it a lot in Madrid when I was there in 85, and there was a really wonderful restaurant there, and their speciality was a young a beef between a calf,
a veal.
And on its way to being a semi-grown animal. So you get this, the meat is just extraordinary. And they would cook a chop from that, which is probably a pound and a half. And they would serve it on a hot terracotta plate. And it was just phenomenal. If you're into meat, that was like the stage in its development. That was the way to eat that. So, yeah, I'd probably go for that.
Okay. And George, what would yours be?
Really good vongole, probably.
The vongole, your own vongole.
No, I don't want to cook my last meal.
Where's your favourite place to get vongole?
Venice is the best place to get vongole.
Do you reckon?
Do you think?
I don't know where it is.
No,
you know, you've got to know where you go. Go away, from where all the tourists are, and that is not difficult.
What are we doing for pudding? Big pudding person?
Something like that, very definitely.
Bread pudding.
Bread pudding was a thing my nan made, and that's thing.
Is it different to bread and butter?
It's brown.
Oh yeah, totally different. It's more like a cake. So yeah, maybe that. Yeah, maybe bread pudding.
Okay.
With custard, a really good custard on it, a proper custard.
What, like a bird's custard? Or you want more fancy?
No,
like a
proper
creme anglaise.
Proper made, you know, proper made custard.
Okay, fine. What are you doing?
Pistachio ice cream.
Love pistachio.
There's a good one. I think they've got them down here. Adonno's. Do you know them? It's really good. I bet they've got one down here.
It's a gelato.
Where have they got it?
They've got about half a dozen around London. And I have it. I go everywhere and try the pistachio, and nowhere's beating it thus far.
Have you tried olive oil on your pistachio ice cream?
Yeah. It's a good vibe.
Michael McIntyre told us about
that.
Yeah. I made olive oil ice cream.
Olive oil ice cream is delicious, but olive oil on his pistachio, he said it was a game changer when he was on holiday.
Oh, they do, and in Braun, they do this amazing rhubarb frangipani tart, actually, that with creme fraiche.
Mm. Oh, you know what the best pudding is?
Go on.
Noel Boisjoli's
Tarte
au Pomme.
Yeah, that is pretty
What's
good.
What's that?
The farmer lady that lives next to me in Normandy,
where
in that area, farmers. Ladies there who fancy themselves as cooks, they're judged on their tarte au pomme, apple tart.
Yeah.
And it's just an open tart. And his mum was so impressed when she first tasted it, she got the recipe and she still makes her tarts now.
Noelle used to make these pork chops. I don't eat a lot of meat, but she used to make these pork chops with apple, That was just bananas. That was going to be that was a close runner for my main.
Vongole or Noelle's pork chops.
Yeah. Imagine Noelle's featuring heavily at the moment.
Yeah, but her tarte aux pommes, that would be my last dessert.
Does she put calvados on it?
No, she doesn't put calvados in it. It's just the right. She just the magic. No, she didn't put any of that on.
Where's the apples from? What sort
of apples? Their own apples.
Yeah.
That whole area is all apples, basically.
It's apples there. That's
Normandy's apples, isn't it? That's why there's calvados. Yes.
That's it.
Before we let you go, we just need to ask
to stay forever.
I know, this has been really interesting.
I'm very really happy to stay forever.
Just keep making like that. You'll have no problem,
Do you think you've got good table manners?
Not particularly. I'm sort of. If George is around or his mum's around, I do try and keep my feet out of the trough. And so.
What can't you stand in somebody else when they're at the dinner table that they do wrong?
I can't stand people going. I might have done that
because I've got a cold.
No, you didn't. Okay, you didn't. Good. You didn't. Don't worry, I'd have pulled you up on it.
All right. But,
and mum likes to finish the chat with a final request.
Do you like karaoke?
Do I like
sounds a bit trite after all we've talked about.
I know, but you've got to do it, Mum.
Do you ever, if you had to sing karaoke, what would be your song, Larry?
You know what? It probably sounds a little bit weird. I'm not really much of a performer.
Bloody hell. Jesus Christ. You are... That's like you telling me.
He's not really. But
it's
he
like
would
you
be,
telling
but
me I'm an introvert. Really. Yeah,
but he's not actually. He's not. He's. I actually made
he
you
was
right
on
there.
Strictly.
Yeah, but it's. Yeah, but it's. But he's not. Like he's not a real like showman.
All right, it doesn't matter. You're at the but end. He, but he.
But he would.
Party.
But he. Well, if he would do anything, he would do Albert and the Lion. Which is a Lancastrian poem.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. You don't even know what it is,
Jesse,
do you?
It was Albert and the Lion. It's about
there's a famous seaside town called Blackpool that's noted for fresh air and fun. That Mr. and Mrs. Ramsbottom went there with young Albert, their son. A grand little lad with young Albert, all dressed in his best, quite a swell, with a stick, with an horse's head handle, the finest that Woolworths could sell. Now, they didn't think much of the sea there. The waves were all middling and small, and there were no wrecks. Nobody drowned. In fact, nothing to laugh at all. So, seeking for further amusement, they paid and went into the zoo, where they'd lions and tigers and camels and old ale and cheese sandwiches too. There was one great big lion there called Wallace. His nose were all covered with scars. And he lay in a somnolent posture with a side of his head on the bars. But this didn't seem right to young Albert. He'd heard lions was ferocious and wild, and to see Wallace lying so peaceful, it just didn't seem right to the child. So straightway, the brave little fella, without showing a morsel of fear, took his stick with the horse's head handle and shoved it in Wallace's ear. Well, you could see that the lion didn't like it. But given a kind of a roll, he pulled Albert inside the cage with him and he swallowed the little lad whole. Now, Pa, who'd seen the occurrence, just didn't know what to do next, said Mother. Yon lion's at Albert. And Mother said, I am vexed. So Mr. and Mrs. Ramsbottom, quite right when all said and done, they went to the animal keeper to tell him the lion had eaten their son. Well, the keeper was quite nice about it. He said, what a nasty mishap. Are you sure that it's your boy he's eaten? Pa said, am I sure? Here's his cap. Well, the manager had to be called for. He came and he said, what's to do? Pa said, yon lion's eaten Albert, and him and his Sunday best too. Said Mother, right, it's right, young fella. I think it's a shame and a sin for a lion to go and eat Albert, and after we've paid to come in. Well, the manager wanted no trouble. He took out his purse straight away. He said, how much to settle the matter? Pa said, how much do you usually pay? At that, Mother got quite excited. Was right when all's dead and done. She said, somebody's got to be summonsed. So that were deciding upon. So they went straight round to the police station in front of the magistrate chap, and they told him of the lion eating Albert, and to prove it, they showed him his cap. Well, the magistrate gave his opinion. He said, I see there's really no one to blame. And Mr. and Mrs. Ramsbottom can still add further sons to their name. And that Mother got proper blazing. Oh, thank you, sir, kindly, said she. What, spend all my life raising children? To feed ruddy lions? Not me. Now, You've heard how young Albert Ramsbottom in the zoo up at Blackpool one year with a stick with the horse's head handle gave a lion a poke in the ear, and the name of the lion was Wallace, and the poke in the ear made him wild. And before you could say Bob's your uncle, he'd upped and he'd swallowed the child. Well, he was sorry the moment he'd done it, for with children he'd always been chums. And besides, he'd no teeth in his nozzle, and he couldn't chew Albert on gums. He could feel the lad kicking inside him as he lay on his bed of dried ferns, and it might have been little lad's birthday he wished him such happy returns. But Albert kept kicking and fighting till Wallace arose feeling bad, and he thought it was time that he started to stage a comeback for the lad. So, putting his head down in a corner, on his front paws he started to walk, and he coughed and he sneezed and he gargled till Albert shot out like a cork. And old Wallace felt better directly, and his figure once more became lean. And the only difference with young Albert was his face and his hands was quite clean. Meanwhile, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsbottom had gone home for their tea, feeling blue. Mother said, "Hey, I feel right down in the mouth, like." Father said, "Oh, I bet Albert does too." Said Mother, "It just goes to show you, the future's never revealed. If I'd thought we were going to lose him, I'd not had his boots soled and healed." "Well, look, let's look on the bright side," said Father. "What cannot be helped must be endured. Every cloud has a silvery lining. And we did have young Albert insured." Well, a knock at the door came that moment as Father these kind words did speak. 'Twas the young man from the Prudential. He'd call for their per tuppence per person per week. Well, when Pa saw who'd been knocking, he laughed, and he kept laughing so that the young man said, "What's it to laugh at?" And Pa said, "Aye, you're laughing all when you know." "Excuse him for laughing," said Mother. "But really, some things happen so strange. Our Albert's been ate by a lion. You've got to pay us for a change." Said the young man from the Prudential, "Come, come, let's understand this. You don't mean to say that you've lost him?" And Ma said, "Oh, no, no, we know where he is." Well, when the young man had heard all the details, a purse from his pocket he drew, and he paid them with interest and bonus the sum of £9, 4 and 2. And Pa had scarce got his hands on the money when a face at the window they see. And Mother said, "Hey, look, it's Albert!" And Father said, "Aye, it would be." The young lad came in all excited and started his story to give. And Father said, "I'll never trust lines again as long as I live." Well, the young man from the Prudential to pick up the money began. And Father said, "Here, just a moment. Don't be in such a hurry, young man." And giving young Albert a shilling, he said, "Here, pop off back to the zoo. There's the stick with the horse's head handle. Go and see what the tigers can do."
Brilliant.
Love it. Thank
have
you
Have you
for
recorded that,
that
for... Yep, you now. Should.
Yep, now.
Here's was... now.
Thank you.
Hey, not at all. Pleasure. It's lovely.
Lovely.
Good
northern
accent. Yes. Well, it's
all right. It's no, a very good.
It's all, we're it's, impressed.
For a southerner, it's all right.
Especially because
you know I mean?
We've been Jessie's favourite place used to be Blackpool.
Did it? Yeah.
Oh, that was great. Yeah. I want my kids to listen.
You know,
to that.
I tell you something. I did that. Who do you think? Or they did. Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And they went down the line from my adopted mother, and they traced us all down to a family of menagerie owners, and my great great uncles were lion tamers.
Oh my
Stop.
God.
And do you know who their number one lion was in their act?
Wallace.
Shut up. That's amazing.
I know. Tell me about it. That poem has been a part of my life. That was what I did as an audition to
it
become
to be
a
on
professional
children.
Actor.
Do you remember it used to be on...
It was Stanley Holloway.
Yeah,
it was
Stanley
his,
Holloway.
It was his number.
And there used to be a children's... Favourites. Do you remember children's
yeah,
favourites?
Oh,
you had Pink Toothbrush on a blue toothbrush, Nelly the Elephant, and they often had Albert.
Albert
and the
Lion.
How many have you heard that?
That was I used to make him do it all that again.
It's amazing.
It's fabulous.
Thank you so much for being on Table Manners. It's been inspiring, educational.
Yeah, we've loved it.
Such a pleasure.
And you had second helpings.
Yeah.
We love people with good appetites.
Exactly. You've got to have people with a good appetite.
So if people want to try your bread, the flour, your flour in... Well, no, your bread. The flour...
Whatever.
I don't know
if they want to support a farming system, which is sorting out the environment and makes much healthier food for them, then they should go on our website, which is wildfarm.co.uk, and they'll be able to find a stockist near them. And they're in 500 Marks & Spencer stores up and down the country, so there's definitely one of them that won't be too far from you. And there's a couple of places you can get it online if you want to get the flour yourself and start working with it. And Yeah,
and the various restaurants around London that are everywhere, the bread mate. Made everywhere. With it.
It's all the stockists are online. So yeah.
Thank you so much, Larry and George Lamb, for coming over and teaching us a thing or two.
Thank
about
you.
Lions and Lovely. Flour and there you go. Farming. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies. That was wicked
thank
fun.
You,
thank you. That was great.
Episode. I absolutely loved that conversation.
It was such good fun and so interesting and so motivating.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we've got our very own Tony Robbins in George Lamb. He is also so charismatic.
He's lovely.
And they were just such...
Albert and the Lion.
I loved it. I never heard it.
I grew up with that.
I loved it. It was a really wonderful couple of hours. We could have kept on chatting. I mean, we barely kind of talked. I feel like we barely talked about food because there was so much more to talk about.
Well, it was all about food, darling.
I know, but I think you take George Lamb, yeah. If you knew of him in the noughties, was this, you know, star on the telly, but obviously so unfulfilled and has found this amazing calling and is doing so much important work. And we think he should start his own bloody political party or whatever.
Absolutely. He was... The cat's here again.
Yeah, the cat lives with you, Mum.
Darling, but he doesn't need attention all the time. I want stroking all the time, Prince.
Poor Prince. Thank you so much to George Lamb and Larry Lamb for coming over, eating seconds of both courses.
They enjoyed the food.
They loved it.
It worked all right, didn't it?
Absolutely. Thank you for cooking. Is it me up for cooking next? Am I doing it next?
I don't know which. I'm lost track.
If you want to learn about Grow or Wild Farmed, we've got the links in the notes. Go and check it out.
It was such an interesting lunch.
We'll see you next week.
Be well.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.